Welcome to TA1. Everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and other things. Everything you want to know about adventure racing and other things. Anyway, this is an Other Things podcast. Daniel Evans, race boss for the Race to Alaska and WA360. So this is sort of a continuation of our episode with Jason and Daniel. One of those episodes that went a lot of places that I didn't expect and turned out pretty cool, I think. So I am back from the Maine Summer Adventure Race, and it was a great time, really cool race. Biblical proportion rain the last few hours, like record-setting rain for that area of Maine. That made for great pictures and great videos, so it was a good time. Back home, hot, tired. Yeah, let's see, I decided I was up for 42 hours pre-race, race, and editing. Yay me. Anyway, yeah, humble brag. That's it. Yeah, let's get this episode out because it was really a fun one and I think you're going to enjoy it. So remember, slow is fast. Fast is good, so slow is good. Be careful. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Daniel, is that you?
Yeah, how's it going, man? Randy.
Good. So can I call you Daniel, or do I have to call you Mr. Race Boss?
Oh, please. Yeah. We'll stick with Daniel this time, okay. You know. When you get to know me better, then you got to go by Race Boss.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds fair enough. So,
how's it going, man?
How are you? I'm good. It's hot. Hot and I'm tired.
Hot and tired. Where are you at? Are you in? South Dakota. Hold on. Wait. Don't tell me.
No.
Colorado.
South Dakota.
Oh, South Dakota. Yeah, it's hot there.
Yeah. Western South Dakota, though. So in the Black Hills. So I actually live in the middle of the woods. So
Not bad. That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah. But yeah. I just got back from 5 days in Maine shooting a race. So it's like, you know how it is after a race and you just like.
The decompression.
Tired. Yeah. Just let it. Let's get back to work and have some rest. So, I guess we should start with who are you?
All right. Well, my name is Daniel Evans, and I'm the race boss for adventure races at the Northwest Maritime Center. And they are the Race to Alaska 7048 and the newest one, Washington 360.
So, and most of the people listening to this will know the Washington 360 from our idiot friends, Jason and Daniel. So,
Okay. Machines. They're, yeah. It was pretty amazing.
Did you have any idea that they were even capable of finishing?
Oh yeah. You know, yeah. With Washington 360, it's a 2-week timeline. So it's kind of choose your own adventure in that. Yeah. You go blasting or you can like camp every night and you still have a pretty good chance of making it as long as you do some mileage during the day. It's designed for, I think, different levels of whatever peak people are trying to climb, you know?
Yeah. So the R to AK, Race to Alaska, was that the first one or what, how did all these start?
Race to Alaska started in 2015. That was the first year that we ran Race to Alaska. So it's like the head of it all. And it's the longest, takes the most commitment and the highest, I think I would say, yeah, the highest level of skill. And 2 years after that in 2017, I started 7048, which is in Washington State, and it's a human powered only event. Mm-hmm. And then just this year created Washington 360. And it was, we were looking at 2 years with no Race to Alaska. And part of it was just getting tired of sitting on our hands, you know, and I was getting tired of waiting for other people to make decisions. So I just made a decision to do something else.
Yeah. What's the 70-48?
The 70-48 is pretty cool. It is essentially, it's 70 miles. You have 48 hours to complete it. And you can do it in any kind of human powered craft, but there's no motors allowed on board and no kind of any sailing at all. And, you know, you get everything from like OC6s, the big outriggers, to there was pedal drive on catamarans, like two 10 speeds at one time. Someone made a kayak out of reclaimed styrofoam off the beach. And I mean, that did not finish, but it's been a real mix. And it's a mix of like ages. There's a lot of younger folk in that one. I mean, like teenagers.
So is that like the gateway drug to all these?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. If you're a human powered person, I mean, it's, you know, I call it a 48 hour power lift because that time of year, basically you're looking at the chance of northerlies and you're headed north on the water. And there are a couple brutal moments. This year was a classic because less than 50% of the teams even finished. And that was around 100 teams. Yeah.
So who does these races? And how does the breakdown between serious racers and, I don't know, what do you call non-serious racers? Do you have a term? Because I don't have a good term.
I mean, I call them dirtbag adventurers.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, and they're like, you know, typically they're out there, they're pushing the thing they pulled out of the blackberry bushes, or their live aboard that they decided to scrape the barnacles off of, or they're borrowing someone beat up Nacra, which is just a little like beach, you know, Toby cat thing. But you know, they're no less serious about their endeavor. The Race to Alaska, it came out of this dude, Jake Beatty's mind, a friend of mine, and the idea that like there could be a challenge like that. And it was the first one. And I mean, if there's nothing that gives a better example of really where we're putting the value in this race by looking at the race awards. So first place for Race to Alaska is $10,000. Second place is a set of like medium level steak knives. And third place is a really hearty clap on the back.
Yeah.
As is fourth place, fifth place, sixth, seventh, eighth, all the way down.
Yeah.
So it really, like, you know, the thing that I've come to really love about it is that in any of these races that you will have, like in the human powered, you have these like surf skis that, you know, cost thousands of dollars next to the third generation Grumman canoe. And in the sailing races, you'll have $250,000 boats next to 30-year-old beat up like 27-foot boats, you know, that are like racer cruisers. And no one is like chagrined by that. No one's thrown off by that because they don't come thinking like, what I got to do is beat all these other people. By and large, some people do, but most of them are like, oh God, I hope I can finish. And let me do that challenge. Yeah.
Are the second place finishers pretty happy with the steak knives? Is that kind of a thing?
I mean, secretly, I think there's a competition to come in second, not first.
Yeah.
More so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because $10,000 doesn't really pay for anyone if they're, you know, doing a race boat up to Alaska. I mean, hell, it costs half that to get the thing back.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. I like that. Looking at the facts, people say, how do I get the boat back? And you're basically just like, well, you know, just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I mean, I don't know. You're done with the race means I'm done with you. And so that's great. And that's the other part about it is like, they're all based on that philosophy of like simpler, sometimes a whole lot harder. So for all the races, there's hardly any rules. And I often tell people, it's like, look, this is the gist of it. You show up at this time, I'll fire a gun or wave my hands and you'll go. And if you make it to the other line, you know, I'll be there, or, you know, one of us, me or this guy, Jesse, will be there to hug you and congratulate you on an amazing, amazing finish. But besides that, there's not a whole lot of rules.
Yeah. There's like one checkpoint between the start and the finish, right?
Yeah. Race to Alaska has two. You got to go through Seymour Narrows and then Bella Bella, which is about the halfway mark. And then there's two for 7048. So 360 is a slightly different, and you essentially got to go around a couple things as you start in Port Townsend. You go to the bottom of Puget Sound, and then you got to make your way up, and you got to either go through the rapids of Deception Pass or through this thing called the Swinomish Slough, which is this horrible, shallow, muddy, hard to predict current waterway. Then all the way into Canada to this little known area of land called Point Roberts that is actually owned by us, but you can only get there by water. You kind of round a buoy up there, then you got to make it back to Port Townsend. And I broke that up into three classes. It just felt to make sense. And it's, you know, go fast, and those are the ones that are really gunning for it. Go hard, those are the ones that are pushing their motorhome on the water or their jalopies. And then human powered. And a lot of the reason I did it was because I wanted to recognize the feat of the human power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. And it looked like this year, like there was no wind. So, you know, human power works great, right? Till the wind comes up.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were killing it. Like into day three, you know, two human power were in the lead. And then the wind came up. And people started to have to sleep. You know, they were going, they were draining their batteries all the way down. And there was some wind in there, but they were able to get into leaves or power through it. But there was a squall that sat down on the race course of day two. It actually dismasted someone, capsized someone else, sent a bunch scurrying, and some of them with big enough sails just took off.
It's... How do you evaluate whether somebody can do this? I mean, obviously it's not by their boat, right? Because, you know, junk boats could do fine, but how do you evaluate the people to say, yeah, you do know what you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. I share that responsibility with my top secret vetting team. I've gathered some real experts in both kind of this kind of epic and adventure experience stuff on the water, as well as like boat design and other things. And, you know, and I have a pretty long background of experiencing bad ideas that I've narrowly escaped. And so we asked for an adventure resume. And then, you know, what's really interesting is not just what they write, but how they write it. Whether they go long form and really give us the essay. Some people give bullets. One guy just gave us screenshots of all his track lines that he had done a couple different places. And like he was on a kayak, and he had a track line that went from like Florida to Cuba, back to Florida to Cuba, back to Florida. And then another one that like pretty much in the end filled up all of San Francisco Bay. And then the third one created in his track line an outline of the entire West Coast multiple times. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna take that one as okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Who, what's the one that you got and you're like, you look at it and you're like, nope. Oh. Jump to mind.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to name them, but there are definitely people I deny in 748. It's much easier to accept a kind of wide range of boats. They're in, you know, pretty much the front country, and though the whole race is kind of unsupported, it's not really unsupervised. I have a lot of safety systems in the background. In the sailboats, I mean, there's just some boats where I'm like, that person on that boat is not going to even come close to finishing. I'm not sure if they'll make it to day two. So I'm like, no. And
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And it, yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have to give them a reason, or do you just say not this year, or do you give them suggestions on how to make it, yeah, to get better?
So because it is, these races are, I say that these races are designed for the everyday hero. You just got to find that in yourself. And because of that, I have to be really accepting of what it means to be experienced enough to pull this off. So you don't actually have to be like some superhero sailor, but you got to have adventure in your back pocket. You have to know how to get yourself out of trouble. So there's a lot of things around, I get like people who like free dive to 100 feet and have been in the military and parachuting, and they took up sailing 3 years ago, but they taught like navigation classes to all the army for 2 years. And I'm like, yeah, you're not going to die. You're going to figure that. But every one of them that I feel like, or me and the team feel like, isn't suitable, I call them and I talk to them and try and create like benchmarks. Like, these are the things we're seeing that are wrong. And it might be like, you are just not familiar with that boat enough. You might be good enough, but you need to be out in 30 knot winds and big seas. You need to capsize it and swim around. You need to document that and show us. And by and large, most of them don't do it. They move on to easier things. But a couple of them, like there was one guy who I had a whole list of things, and he came back like 4 months later. He had lost 160 pounds. He had spent the entire winter pushing his boat into the big water we have around here, the Strait of Juan de Fuca and the Strait of Georgia, playing in 10 to 12 knot currents, flipping the thing over, learning more about it. And he documented it all. And I couldn't believe the dedication. Uh-huh. And he raced, he didn't finish, but he's still part of the family. He comes to all the things, he's talking about doing it again. We have a lot of events around it, so it's really cool.
Yeah. Is you said something that really strikes with me, because of what my wife always says, is this going to kill me? And if not, I can keep going. So is that kind of your benchmark? This person's not going to die, so we'll let him do it.
I mean, somewhat, there's a little more that goes into it, but definitely like the first line of safety for all these races is, like in a lot of adventure racing, right, is the person. Can they put their ego aside long enough to really evaluate the situation and say, today is not the day to keep going? And that's the first thing I look for, because if I feel like they're not able to pull back, it doesn't matter how good they are. I'm not looking for people to be like stupid cowboys on my, there's plenty of other places they can.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Cowboys. That's cool. I need to check that off. Let's go do that.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I'm just risking my life. I'm willing to do that. And I'm like, well, not on my race. I'm not willing for you to do that. And I've had a few that were like that. And I just said, I don't like your judgment. I'm not comfortable with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and quite honestly, it's, to me, water sports, sailing, big water, oceans, that's to me, that's the freakiest. Everybody knows me, knows they don't like water, even though I always end up in the water when I'm in a race. But so, yeah, you got to be really careful, because that shit's dangerous. I mean, to me, that's like the most dangerous thing in the world, because if you collapse and fall down on the land, you're just going to fall down on the land. In the ocean, you drown.
Yeah, and you can't just decide 1 minute that you're done.
Yeah.
If you don't plan that ahead, then, it's the thing I really love is like, there's all these characteristics about the sea, right? Ah, the sea is a fickle bitch. The sea is a temptress. The sea, the truth that I believe is like, the sea doesn't care. The sea is a powerful force that will move through you, or move around you, mm-hmm, or carry you, but it doesn't care. And so, the choices you make you're not in competition with the water, because the water never signed up for that. And so you can't just go out and be like, whoa, 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 time out, time out, time out. The seas are gonna roll through you. someone called it, there's a long time ago, the Race to Alaska, which I love. They said it was, because it goes all the way into Alaska, of course, 750 miles. They said it is very much like the Iditarod, except with a chance of drowning or being run over by a cruise ship or eaten by a bear. And I'm like, yeah, that seems pretty suitable. Yeah.
Okay, so of those three things, which one is the most likely? Probably not getting eaten by a bear.
We've had a couple bear encounters, but we've had probably way more cruise ship near misses. And the drowning, you know, it's, you know, I stress safety gear pretty heavy duty. So we've had quite a few people in the water for sure. But there's never been, let me think about this. I know there's never been anyone who hasn't operated like to the letter with what they should do. They're wearing the right gear. They make the right communication. And I go over a lot of that. And I bring search and rescue head honchos in to talk at skipper's meetings, scare the hell out of people. It's awesome. Yeah. It's really good.
Has anybody ever showed up ready to start? You give them your little safety briefing and they're like, no. Or once they get there, are they committed?
Oh, have they ever? Yeah, no, people have backed out at the race start. Yeah, that happens quite a lot. Yeah.
Well, I mean, kudos for them, really, right? They get there and realize. So
yeah,
my little story of that is doing an ITERA triathlon, and 50 yards out in this seaweedy, cold, junky lake, and thinking, I'm going to drown. I mean, it just, you know, and I'm like, there's a whole bunch of people back there that are going to see me turn around and get on the beach, and I'm like, and if I don't, I'm going to drown. I probably wouldn't have, but, and I turned around. I mean, I don't want to drown.
Right. I mean, really, there's nothing better than making sure you got another day to try again, right? It's just nothing better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some people that actually just do the start and then they quietly pull over. Because the cool thing is on all the races, we put a spot tracker on them, issue each one of them a spot tracker, and we put it on this map that it's online, so anyone can see it 24 hours a day. Yep. And they're required to keep them on and check them, blah, blah, blah. But you can like watch where everyone's going 24 hours a day. And I turn into this horrible tracker junkie when it happens, because I'm always like, how fast are they going? Where are they going? Why'd they make that choice? That's interesting. They've been there a long time. Yeah, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. In adventure racing, they're called dot watchers.
Oh, interesting.
And they're for a race, there is a whole community that will be basically, because they're all around the world, they'll be on there 24 hours a day tracking and making commentary and watching, and they're all discussing, and it's pretty cool. I watched the WA360 because, you know, I knew somebody, so that's how you get into it. But I kind of remember seeing one, probably the last R2AK, in watching it a little bit and being like, kind of like, what's this? So maybe we'll get some more dot watchers next year. So, cause you're on for next year, right?
Yeah, we're on for next year. Yeah. And I mean, we have a pretty good cadre of tracker junkies for sure. That do the watching, and a lot of people show up at the finish line. We got some people that show up at almost every finish, which is amazing, because, you know, people can show up at any time, day or night. And for whatever reason, people who are like a half hour away from the finish line will show up either in like 2 minutes or 4 hours, but never the half hour that it says. Yeah.
Yeah. Watching dots or trackers is almost an art. Because I have to do it all the time. Because when I'm filming, you know, I'm shooting a race, I'm, you know, that's my life, is looking at the tracker and figuring out where the teams are. And you'll be like, they're right there. They're going to be here in 5 minutes. 2 hours later, maybe they're there, or they're 2 hours away, and you turn around and here they come. But
yeah,
you kind of get a feel for the tracker, how long it's taking to update, and, you know, a black art.
Yeah, it's totally true. Yeah, we switched trackers this year from what we've been using for Race to Alaska and 7048, and it's way better. Yeah, it's been an easier experience, but it doesn't get rid of that
no.
phenomenon. Nothing does.
You still have to learn it. So
yeah, totally.
So, what's your background that qualifies you for judging all these people?
Well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, you mentioned a few exploits that might have caused a little trouble, but so I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one of the qualities is that, like, I started them, so that helps. So I know him pretty well. But for this area, I'm from Alaska, and I grew up in the mountains in Alaska. I ended up pretty much, learning to rock climb, like, kind of out of high school. And then, I lived out in my car for like 10 years. I worked for Outward Bound as an instructor and then a trainer. And so, I did a lot of this. And, I lived on my own engineless sailboat for 3 years in this whole Salish Sea. And so I'm really familiar with the waters and been up and down the Inside Passage. And then I ended up, working as a captain. So I'm a licensed captain and, ended up working a lot in Alaska on big boats, so cruise ships and, but in ferries and schooners, the like piratey wooden ships, doing a fair bit of that. And I found out at some point, so I ended up getting hired for my risk management background. And I think I was thinking about that a while ago, like, what makes me good at risk management started really as assessing, danger when I was with groups and when I was on my own personal trips, and then with some, being a little more studious about it and kind of growing into it. But my risk management, it ended up becoming a background that involved risk management. And so it was a pretty natural fit. And so the guy, Jake Beattie, who he's an old friend of mine, he was an old Outward Bounder. When he came up with the idea, he was starting to develop it. And he ran, I was a captain of a schooner here locally, this 125 foot educational craft, really nice boat called Adventurous. But he's like, Race to Alaska, this thing I'm thinking about. And I'm like, I know, it's like the best bad idea I've ever heard of. He's like, I want you to come make it happen. And I was like, I'm in. And so it was a real joint exploit that first year. And then he went back to being, more the executive director that he is. And I kept on.
Yeah. So, well, you have that thing that most adventure racers have in common. It's like, hey, let's go do this dumb thing. And your first answer is always yes, right?
Yeah.
You might think about it and say no, but has it always been yes? I bet you, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. There may be like a little ways down there, it'd be like, yes, but shouldn't we do this other thing first? Or, but do we have enough of this? But yeah, I mean, it's, it's like a lot of us, right? There is, there's a sense of like, for me at least, there's a sense of like presence that I get into when I'm doing something outdoors that requires my attention, that makes me feel more full. And Going back to that temple is been what I've been doing all my life, either consciously or subconsciously. Yeah.
Do you think your background, a teenager in Alaska, did you know how to assess risk of things, or is it something you learned by doing stupid things when you're young?
I mean, I think it's the latter. Absolutely. I mean, it's like almost, I would collapse in the snow in the middle of winter. And it was only because my buddy was like aware enough to drag me, the last 100 yards into the cabin, or it's like, you just get lucky. Like the rig breaks down in the middle of nowhere, and the only way you got out was because someone came by in a snowmobile. Or I've been lucky a lot.
But people say that they get lucky a lot, but what is it really? I mean, is it that you're, I don't know, or are you just really lucky? Or are you prepared to be lucky?
I mean, maybe it's a magnetism, right? Like there's an attitude about what we do when we go out. And there certainly is in the racers that go out. You can tell the difference in those who feel the draw, know the draw, than those who are like trying to find that spot. And maybe it's that like it's something that we're putting out to the cosmos that gets answered for us when we need it the most. Could be.
Karma?
Good
things come to you?
I mean, good things definitely come to me. Yeah. I mean, I live in Port Townsend, this like sleepy little maritime town in the edge of the Olympic Peninsula. I have a 9-year-old daughter who's incredible. I'm a roof over my head. I mean, that's all pretty good. And I get like people will ask what I do and I tell them I'm a race boss and they're like, you know, what the hell is that? And I'm like, yeah, let me tell you what that is because it's fun. Yeah.
So when they say that, what's your elevator pitch, so to speak, when somebody says, what do you do? And you say, I'm a race boss, and they say, what's that?
I say, I'm this guy that gets to run these adventure races that allow people to find and overcome their own personal challenges. It happens to be on the water, because that's what I know. But, you know, it's, you know, in some ways, if you're familiar with Outward Bound at all, you know, they would oftentimes, you know, put people in these kind of crisis situations and then kind of facilitate their way out of it. And they would learn stuff from it. That was like the whole jam. It was like train, main, final was the way. You train them up, you let them run for a while, then you'd be hands off and make sure they don't kill themselves as they go on. Mm-hmm. And, I love seeing that transformation in people. I love what it does for them. And well, we've always joked, Jake and I have talked about it plenty, but it's like the ultimate Outward Bound course is to do one where we as instructors don't have to go out all the time because that's exhausting. And so I feel like these in some ways are that, you know, they create the opportunity for people to do what they need to do in moments where the only thing they really can count on is either them or their teammate, but it sure ain't technology, it sure ain't innovation. It's just your own skill and your own creativity and your own tenacity, I guess. Yeah. That's a long ass elevator pitch, so that wouldn't work.
No, but see, I was listening the whole time, so it works. It's when they start going like that you have to worry about it.
It's just a really tall skyscraper I'm riding at that time.
Yeah. Or a really slow elevator.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
So, what... I ask this of a lot of racers. I'm going to modify it a little bit, but what's the best day and the worst day you've ever had on the water?
Like personally?
Yeah. Yep.
I say the worst day. I mean, you know, they all get better after having done them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time off Cape Hatteras, and there was also a time on the East Coast and Point Conception on the West Coast. They're kind of equal, but I'll go with the West Coast one. But I was delivering a boat, and the boat was cursed. It was a 40-foot sailboat, and it lost its engine pretty straight out. It lost its hydraulics. The water bags all burst. The seals on the front hatch blew out. So it was like a wave that came in there all the time. We lost electric, so you had to bilge pump all the time. And I can remember this one moment and the storms followed us, no matter offshore, inshore, no matter where we went. And I can remember this one moment when our jib up forward blew out and it was starting to rip at the head. And we just made it. So, I mean, I'm not a great sailmaker, obviously, but then these two guys looked at me and they're like, I'm not going out. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go out. And I can remember being up there holding onto the pulpit, the railing around the bow, trying to bring this down. And I felt this presence over me. It was just like looming, you know? And I looked up and all I could see, and it was of course night, and all I could see was just nothing. And it was a coursing nothing. It was a wall of water that the bow pierced under, and I was just underwater. And when it came up, all the water rushed off so hard that I was shooting off the side of the boat. And the only thing that caught me were these railings, and they just because my shoulders didn't fit. And so I was hanging off in the middle of the night, the sail going crazy. And the boat comes lurching out of the water. And so I'm like, 20 feet in the air, 30 feet in the air on the crest of this wave, slipping out of it. And I almost slipped out right when the boat hit the next and dove into the next wave, which happened to push me back on the boat. And I was able to, like, in the underwaterness, grab hold. And that was, that was a terrible day. It was a whole terrible trip. But it taught me so much. Kind of like terrible trips teach us all.
Yeah.
And it's a place that I can go back to. Oftentimes I'm like, well, at least I'm not on Highland Fling, that garbage. And the best days are totally about the people I'm with, if I'm with someone, like these, they can be slow 5-knot breezy sails, lazily on a lake with the right people. Or like I did once going up the Inside Passage, I did a spinnaker run with big, beautiful, colorful sail in front of me. And we held it for 2 days, 2.5 days.
Wow.
And we were going like 10, 11 knots the entire time, cooking food, whistling, paying attention the whole time. But like the people were amazing. Everyone was comfortable. And we were heading towards a big goal, which was to climb. We got a first route ascent of a mountain in Alaska called Mount Fairweather, a coastal mountain there. I was told later it's the longest coastal ascent in the world, but I've never looked that up. But yeah.
No. From starting at the ocean and getting to the top.
To the top. Yeah, it's like at 16,000 something feet is the top of it, the summit. Yeah.
First of all, congratulations, because you're like every adventure racer. You come up with the worst first.
Yeah, right.
I mean, 95% of the time, people know exactly what the worst moment is. So, but you're also the first person on the podcast that's ever sailed to climb a mountain, as far as I know.
All right.
So that's very cool.
That's why
you're not the first licensed captain, though.
No,
sorry, no. You're third. I've had two others. Yeah. Congratulations. That's pretty good. Well, you're the second male captain, so you get a set of steak knives.
Oh, hell yeah. That's what I've always won.
Yeah. So, what do you want to do for adventure?
I'm at that place. I don't know if this is stereotypical or not, but I have a 9-year-old daughter, and my adventure is watching her learn. She's like, we're sailing now. I just have like a 20-foot little Sharpie, an open boat that you can run into anything, run it aground, flip it. It doesn't matter. And it scoots in the lightest wind. And, we go sailing in that, and some other bigger boats that we go out in. And she's a rock climber. She now knows that she likes cracks better than slabs, and camping's her safe place. So it's like, for me, it's like pushing her boundaries. I get to be the person that like challenges her to do a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good. I mean, I still get out with friends sometimes, but I can't get into the expedition mode that I used to. Not right now, at least.
Yeah. Well, good. I really hate these people, particularly climbers that are like, basically going to Nepal to die, that leave, that have families. And that's my pet peeve. So
is it really?
Yes. I think they're so selfish that I just can't stand it. So
really, that's a great pet peeve. I might adopt it. I like that.
It's just bad. But what are you going to do when she's 19 years old and comes to you and says, "Dad, I'm going to do this." And you're like, "Oh, that's maybe not a good idea." How are you going to try and stop her? Or are you going to let her, are you going to make it so she can help her do it?
It goes back to the gravity that you and I are talking about. There's like most of the ideas that are really fun have an element of like bad idea to them. Mm-hmm. And she, she's going to find her own way. Just kind of like I did, and I'm sure you did too. I didn't grow up in a family of adventurers, not even really outdoors people. And, And, you know, I'm lucky that they just didn't care. They're like, yeah, man, just, you know, call when you get back. My mom once told me I was going on this big climb, and she's like, and it was really sweet, but she said, I love you. If you die, and I don't want you to, but if you die, just don't like stick around and like wish you were here and make it hard for us to keep on living. Just say goodbye and move on. I was like, awesome. That's pretty good.
Thanks.
And yeah, I think so. I mean, who knows really, right? But, and how stupid of an idea are we talking about here? But I mean, if she's got the magnetism, then yeah, we can never stop them anyway, right?
No.
Yeah.
You could,
God let her go.
All you can do is pass your wisdom and good luck on to her.
Yeah, or hope. Yeah, hope she's listening. Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Has she tried anything yet that you're like, not yet? Is she, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does she know her limits so far?
She knows her limits. Yeah, better than most kids, actually. And so it's been, she's always down if I'm like, if I say it's safe, she's willing to give it a shot. And I make sure it's really safe, whatever it is. But yeah, she's not a daredevil. Like, you know, some of these other kids, she doesn't climb to the highest part of the tree or run into traffic or decide that she can climb, you know, rocks 40 feet up without a rope. And I've seen other kids do that, which is dumb.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's nice. Yeah, you have the knowledge to tell her, yeah, it's safe-ish.
Well, if not, I can totally BS my way through it. And she's 9, so she has no idea. Yeah.
And if all else fails, you can just grab her hand and take her home.
Yeah.
That's not going to work forever, though.
No, probably not, huh? Yeah. I really hope one day.
Are the races? No, go ahead. You're going to say something more important than I am.
I was just saying that I really hope one day that, like, I'll just I'll drop my role here in the races and I'll just get to take her out in one of them, if not all of them, and we can do them together. And that'd be a pretty good way to launch her into the world.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Yeah, you can put on and then go do them. I mean, is it a little frustrating watching everybody out there having a good time and you're home worrying, basically, sort of?
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm on the water like pretty much the whole time that they're on the water. So I get to run around and I get to like sleep on wet soles of boats and kind of dirt bag it along. So I'm not like totally isolated from it all. But yeah, I mean, it's hard not being part of that story, though I have really... I was surprised by it, but how electrified I was by listening to the stories and talking to people, and they're really gracious. You know, by and large, these people are like, I mean, you know, you meet all kinds of adventure racers. They are like really good people. And there's a few that aren't, and I just stopped talking to them, and that's fine.
Yeah. Do those people eventually fall away? Because it's kind of a running sort of joke, but real in adventure racing is there are no jerks. And we kind of think that they just don't stick around. They got to be there. I mean, right, they've had to be there, but maybe they just, they're jerky enough and nobody pays attention to them and they go away. But
Yeah, you know, there's some of them that are like, they're one and done, you know, I'll see him and then I won't see him again. You know, there's quite a few people who return for a variety of races and some people who have been racing since the beginning and keep coming back, which is amazing.
So even for like the R2AK, you have repeat customers.
There's two teams that have this one woman, Katie Stewart. She's done the Race to Alaska all but one of the years, all but the very first year. And she's done 70-48 twice. And there's one team that's tried to do every race to Alaska, has done the 7048, even did 7048 and race to Alaska at the same time, which is insane because one finishes, the other one starts. But they missed one of the years because they actually, in race to Alaska, there's a qualifying leg. And they didn't time their weather correctly. And they missed it by, they missed the cutoff by 3 minutes. And I got so much hate mail, unbelievable amount of hate mail. But they couldn't reach the bell at 5 p.m. and I took it down. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I that's got to be one of the hardest things for race directors, those people that miss a cutoff by a fraction.
Yeah.
But, hey, it's there, right?
There is this great thing. There was a team that was coming in last in Race to Alaska 1 year. And I have a thing called, I call it the Grim Sweeper, really cute. But it's a boat that follows at a regular rate that everyone knows. And if that boat gets past you, you're done. You're out.
Yeah.
We pull your tracker, show you to the next place. And we've never, for years, we never caught anybody because it's pretty generous. And this 1 year, right, this boat, it's a double kayak coming in. And the Grim Sweeper calls me. And he's like, I think we have the first person. They're not going to make it in by noon. They're just not going to make it. And I'm like, yeah, man, let's go sweep them. This will be our first sweep ever. Awesome. And he's like, but they've tried so hard. I'm like, what? You've been doing this for 3 years. We've talked about how we can't wait to sweep the first piece in person. Go get them. And he's like, you know what? If you want to sweep them, come out here and do it yourself. I won't do it. They worked too hard at it. And so I was like, and then the boat left. And that was like a 50 miles away from where I was in Ketchikan. I was like, well, I guess they're in. So they got it. They're the only ones though.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I understand it, I guess. Right. So
yeah. The heartstrings. Yeah. But if I'm making the decision, especially the qualifying for Race to Alaska, if you can't do that, I don't care why. I'm just not going to be okay with you going to all the way to Alaska.
Well, and it seems like if a boat's that close, they're going to have to finish anyway, because that's right. We're going to have to get to the finish line because that's where they got to get to. So that,
yeah.
I think that is a little bit different story, but.
Yeah. And I was like, I had nothing to do. I was on a dock in Ketchikan. I'd been there for like 3 weeks. It wasn't like I was going anywhere. So I just, you know, sat down in the chair for another hour and they showed up. Yeah.
Do you, this changes, I was going to say, do you just get used to that? But when you're have been sailing and you get in a big storm, how do you wait it out? Because that's all you can do, right? I mean, on a boat you have a lot to do, but how do you mentally go to that place to just like say, we're in a storm, it's going to be over sometime, I don't know when, I'm good.
It's, you know, the toughest part about that has always been the entering of it, right? Which is kind of like, because there's enough, no matter how many storms you've been in, there's enough unknown about the rig. Did you prepare right?
Yeah.
But if you know, you come at it right, you end up in kind of a stable situation and you're either wet or you're not, you know, you're going to get food or you're just going to be hungry and you kind of like settle in the noise. You know, kind of like we can't hear our own heartbeat, even though it's right in our ear, right? You know, the storm just kind of quiets down to whatever it does. And you just stay focused on keeping the helm in the right direction, checking your sails all the time, keeping an eye to weather, seeing if there's any big seas coming up for you after rounding. You just get kind of, you get into that motion and then you ride it out. And I've been in storms that lasted, you know, 30 hours, 36 hours offshore, a little bit long. And, you know, and you even do watch changes and you just kind of settle into like, I know me, I know the boat, and you, that trust comes back. But right when you're entering it, that trust is like nowhere to be found. It is super hiding underneath the reefer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So which is worse, a storm on the ocean or being stuck in a tent on a mountain?
Oh my, the tent on the mountain usually. Yeah. Cause I mean, how many times can you read the same book? I mean, I was stuck in a tent for like 4 days and all we did was dig it out, read the same book, read it to each other. And then the worst part is like, did we really put the tent in the right place? Or is there enough snow that the avalanche is just going to sweep right through us? And you can't move, can't go anywhere. Yeah. Yeah. I don't like it. I'd rather be in the storm.
Yeah. I'm going to stay right here. I'll talk to you when you get done. How much is the race growing, and are you going to have to like sort of limit it a little bit, or is it self-limiting?
It is, so far it's self-limiting. Like I create a safety structure, like, and I decided ahead of time, like how many boats I feel that safety structure can hold. Mm-hmm. And then I just see how close I get to it. I push right up against the edge of that, but so far it's been self-limiting. This last year, the participation for the Washington 360 was phenomenal. I mean, it was 53 boats. I thought maybe half that was going to show up, but I also felt like the safety could handle it. But yeah, so far it's self-limiting.
Yeah. Cool. So, if anybody wants to do the race, they need to go to the website. One, it's fun to read. Two, it'll tell you everything you need to know. And then three, they better start documenting some more adventures. That's a good start.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and start documenting the adventures for sure. Or be a tracker junkie. We do. One of the things I take pride in is that I like hire a media team for the races, and we do like Race to Alaska is probably the most intense, where we're pushing out 1 to 8 minute finished video clips every day, telling the story. We're doing daily write-ups, podcasts, and then the tracker, but we really try and get the people involved. And then Washington 360 was the same way. We have people out there taking photos and really documenting the race and telling the story of the race for all three of the races. So it's, I try and create an event for people who, for whatever reason, can't participate themselves, but want to be part of it.
Yeah.
As best as possible.
Yeah. Well, that's what we see with adventure racing. The race I did shot last weekend, we almost quadrupled their normal numbers of people, at their Facebook page. So.
Yeah, you know it's king. Yeah, that's why you do it, right?
Yeah. Well, I do it because it's way simpler than racing. but you still get to be out there and having fun.
Yeah.
But when it's pissing down rain at 4 o'clock in the morning and they're in their pack rafts on the river, it's like, well, I'm going to go to the car and drive around to where you're getting out. So have fun. Yeah.
That time comes for all of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. When I quit racing, it was like, I'm fine. I haven't had that desire since. So perfect. Every time I see a cool race, I think, well, should I do that? Like, no, it'd be real more fun to go document it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you've been generous with your time. So now's the awkward time when we end the Zoom call.
All right, cool.
You know how that is.
Hang up, Randy. Yeah.
Yeah. Say bye. And then you say bye. And then I think, okay, bye. And so, all right. So we're done. Thanks for your time.
All right. Cool, Randy. Thanks a lot, man. Hey, when do you think it might be out and about so I can hear it?
Next week.
Oh, really? That soon?
Yeah. I actually have one on climbing. A friend of mine did Denali. So his is this week. This one will be out next week. So I'll make sure you get the link.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks.
And we'll put all the information in the show notes so people can sign up, because I know too many idiots. Somebody will sign up.
Cool. All right.
All right.
All right, Randy. Have a good evening, man.
All right. Bye.
Big boss man, can't you hear me when I call? big boss man. Can't you hear me when I call? Just tall, that's all. You got me working, boss man, working round the clock. I need me a drink of water, but you just won't let me stop, big boss man. Oh, can't you hear me when I call? Just so, that's all. Big boss man, big boss man, big boss man.